NBA free agency, not exactly the frenzy of prior years, more of NBA trade season. We've seen a lot of it, and we've seen some interesting things done around the NBA. Nobody better to talk about that and to help navigate the new world, the new era of the second apron. It's Bobby Marks of ESPN. Bobby, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
How are you? Good to have you. Good to have you on.
Yeah, absolutely. On the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline, Bobby Marks joins us. And help us understand, if you can,
sure,
how the Cavaliers, with Ty Jerome coming off his incredible, the efficient season that he had, we thought he was going to maybe get starter money from a team.
Yeah.
That certainly did not happen, and he's no longer on the Cavs. How did that go down?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a matter of, you know, where the market was. I mean, you did see players like Nikhil Alexander-Walker get, I guess, non-tax mid-level money, which is $14 million, you know, to pay a, and Ty had a really good year, you know, I guess to pay a backup, you know, starter type money is probably not the world we live in now. It's almost like players are pegged or slotted based on where they are as far as whether you're a starter or your rotation. Certainly in Cleveland, you have, you know, your core guys are making a lot of money. And then you have, you know, Sam's going to come in at a, you know, $8, $9 million number. He's your bench guy, right? So you almost slot guys as far as how you perceive them. And that's, you know, the day and age of having like, you know, four or five max guys is over. And yeah, I mean, he gets it. And then I think there's also he gets a player option in the third year. He goes to a Memphis team that potentially he could be playing a lot. You can kind of build your value back up again and then hit free agency in 2 years.
Just the way that, you know, just looking at it from a team philosophy, you know, Ty Jerome last year was so good that there was almost zero drop off from Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland to Ty. Now, I understand he did not perform well in that Pacers series, but it didn't seem like anybody performed well outside of Donovan Mitchell in that series. So why do you think they felt that he was disposable, but not Sam Merrill?
Yeah, I mean, I think shooting is probably a little bit more of a premium. I think the ability to get, you know, and you knew what probably what number you wanted to walk away from or what number you wanted to go down the path with Ty before you did the Alonzo trade to get him. And you get him on a, you know, a 2 year, $10 million per year. And the second year's team option there. So yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of different variables there. I think, you know, were you willing to commit 3 years? Were you comfortable with, you know, fully guaranteed 10 years? You know, was it maybe even more? So it's, you know, Lonzo gives you, you know, when he's healthy, you know, pretty high level backup, you know, certainly could start and everything here, but I think there's a lot of kind of intangibles as far as why Ty in Memphis makes more sense than maybe him at Cleveland. Cleveland fans are like, why couldn't we have had him on that 3 year, $27 million contract? And that's probably something for Ty to answer here. And I think it's, as I said, it kind of gives him the opportunity to go back into free agency in a couple of years.
You know, when I see other deals given out, like Gary Trent Jr., what, 2 years, $7.5 million?
Yeah, the minimum.
Were agents totally off? Were they not necessarily ready for just how little money was going to be available?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a lot different than, you remember 2016, we had that cap spike, and everyone went out and made a lot of money. It was like basically like the housing market.
Mozgov,
and then I think,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and then I think agents were caught off the following year, and then there was no money. And a lot of agents got fired because their client was saying, well, wait a minute, if Timothy Mozgov or Joakim Noah or Bismack Biyombo already getting $14, $15 million, that's what I got. I want, and, you know, there's only $6 or $7 million there. I don't think they were caught off guard. I just think the market is, you know, we see an influx of extensions, and the marketplace by doing that, I think we had like 40 to 50 last year, it just condenses as far as how much teams have to spend. I mean, you can certainly say there was Brooklyn that had cap space and then Milwaukee goes out and creates cap space, but at a premium where you're getting, you know, $25 million or, you know, $23.5 million hit for the foreseeable future here. So, I think there are some, like, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr. is a good example. Like, for him, you know, the market probably for what he was looking at probably wasn't great. But you could go to Denver and come off the bench and with Jokic in that group and really, you know, flourish. And maybe you can make your next contract up next year.
Bobby Marks joining us right now on the hotline. Hey, give me a better way to explain to our listeners and fans what is going on with the second apron. They're sick and tired of hearing it. Almost every conversation we have does reference it in some way. So how can we simplify all of this?
Well, it's funny. I did. I went on the Dan Patrick show yesterday, and he asked me that. He goes, "Okay, if you're going into a school of fifth graders, how would you explain it to them?" And I was like, "Wow, I've never really been asked that before in that way." And it kind of got me like thinking. And so, basically, how I explained it, and hopefully this makes sense, is that if you were a child and your parents gave you 20 toys and you had everything you could play with, and then the next year they came back and they said, well, wait a minute, you can only have 5 of those toys. Pick your five best toys. Give me the other 15 back. That's kind of the apron, as far as it makes you kind of pick and choose as far as who you want to keep. You can keep your own, but as you guys are going through it, it makes it awfully expensive. What it doesn't allow you to do, if you're that child, you can't go over and say to Johnny, I want to borrow 2 of your toys, and because that's not allowed now because of how punitive these are, whether it be in trades or in free agency to go out and sign players here. There's no penalties for besides the cost, you know, the standpoint and you know the first round pick stuff that we can explain. You are allowed to pick keep your team together here, but you know, there's the financial angle of it that makes it awfully expensive. We saw it with Boston as far as the deconstruction of their roster. We're probably going to see it with Phoenix coming up in the next few days here. But the goal was to try to level the playing field and give more parity, you know, and we've certainly seen it. It's had a severe I've said this before, and hopefully my friends in the league don't get mad. I've never seen 2 words that scared so many billionaires before. I mean, it really is. I mean, like when the Lakers sale was announced a couple weeks ago, and Mark Walter, who is the owner of the Dodgers and has, you know, got a ton of money, everyone said, well, look at what the Dodgers have been able to do. They've been going out and basically buy a roster. You know, there's no salary cap and everything like that. How is it going to impact the Lakers? And I was like, well, look at Steve Ballmer's one of the wealthiest men in the world, and so is Joe Lacob. Look at what happened with them last year, right? I mean, the Kroenkes, Walmart, I mean, they're scared of the apron. Josh Kroenke has come on TV and said it. So it does make you what it does is make you really become creative. It makes you like, I don't want to say teams were lazy beforehand, but it makes you negotiate. And you kind of have to draw a line in the sand as far as what's important to you and what's a priority and what's more of a luxury.
All right. So you mentioned why the NBA changed its ways. People had really gotten tired of the superstars all teaming up. The super teams felt like nobody had a shot outside of 3 or 4 teams. Well, clearly that's different now. We've had 7 different champions in 7 years. Did we go from 0 to 100 when maybe we only needed to go to like 50? Why did they go to such lengths to completely overhaul their CBA?
Yeah, Golden State and the Clippers ruined it for everyone else. Yeah. I mean, that's probably what happened. And maybe even Brooklyn we can throw in there. No, it's a good point as far as we went. Because it's funny, the rules came into place in 2023. And I felt like I was like a weatherman. You know, I was kept on saying, the storm is coming, the storm is coming. And then I wrote an article last June, and people were like, where did these rules come from? It was like they were introduced 2 years ago. And I think it's funny, if you're a Cavaliers fan who never had to deal with it, now you're getting an introduction to the apron rules and everything. And that's one, you know, listen, there's been a lot of talk about LeBron and what happens with him and Lakers, and can Cleveland get him? And basically the answer is no, because the apron rules, the inability to aggregate contracts, combine contracts to send out, doesn't allow you to go out and add, a marquee player if you're buried financially.
It just feels like we would understand it if we were a super team, right? And we had built a team inorganically. I mean, we drafted Darius Garland. We drafted Evan Mobley. We made a great trade and got the superstar to sign an extension. And yet feels like we're being penalized. And what do we have to show for it? We haven't been out of the second round of the playoffs.
Yeah, and you got Jared Allen, too, in a terrific trade, yeah. Right? I mean, it was like kind of like, you know, in the as part of that James Harden trade here. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think there are – listen, Brooklyn tried to put a super team together. You know, certainly, you know, Golden State, you could make the same thing for as far as they paid a price, significant price, and they drafted Curry, Thompson, and Green. I know they added KD there. So, yeah, it's you know, I do think there are – I would love to see – teams not, you know, I mean, you know, from a salary standpoint, you know, maybe guys that you draft, you're not charged the full amount from a salary standpoint. Maybe we're looking at two different columns here, because then it does reward you a little bit more as far as the ability to kind of retain some of your in-house talent.
All right, Bobby Marks with us. Just a few more. The pecking order in the Eastern Conference. Obviously, Indiana is out.
Yeah.
The injury to Ty Halliburton obviously changed the complexion of everything. But would you kind of weigh in on where Atlanta is? Yeah. Nobody's talking about Philadelphia and what just went down with the Milwaukee Bucks and the Dame Lillard move.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we could start from the top. I mean, I think, you know, Cleveland, I mean, it's funny. Nobody talks about Cleveland. They won 64 games, and I know they lost in the second round, and they bring back pretty much everyone. But I think Cleveland and New York are the two best teams just based on they're like the last man standing, right? They didn't really lose anyone significant. I know Ty hurts a little bit here. And then after that, it's like, you know, Philly's a wild card and, you know, they were the winners last offseason. But it's going to be dependent on where Joel Embiid is. I mean, that's the health standpoint plays a significant role. And Milwaukee with the Turner addition, but you lose Lillard. And I know Damian was going to be out most of the year and they bring back most of that roster. So they're kind of in the middle. Of course, you know, we haven't talked as much Atlanta Hawks and Orlando Magic on TV ever. We've been talking about them, and rightfully so, the last couple of days, just because of what Atlanta's been able to do and add, whether it be Porzingis or Nickeil Alexander-Walker or Luke Kennard, Ethan Newell they drafted, and then Orlando certainly with Desmond Bane trade, and they add Tyus Jones. They've done a nice job. The East is, you know, I think it's pretty wide open. You know, we're not talking about Boston. We're not talking about Indiana, who lose Turner. We'll see Detroit, of course, we can probably throw in the mix here. But I do think there's a lot of parity. But I do think, you know, we can't dismiss Cleveland because they won 64 games. And as I said, I know losing this was disappointing here, but you do return pretty much that whole roster.
We played a clip yesterday on the show. Kevin Durant on a podcast with Steve Nash and LeBron James said, this league is not for small guards. It's really tough to win. Obviously, the Cavs are built with two guards that are short. Donovan Mitchell, you wouldn't really classify him as small, but Darius is obviously someone they alluded to. Do you think there are plenty of different ways to still win in the NBA, or do you think that it'll be tough for the Cavs to get over the hump with their setup?
I don't think. I mean, listen, I know. I mean, New York's got a pretty small guard in Jalen Brunson, and I know they lost in the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, I mean, Shea's length is probably, you know, Shea's 6'3", but he's long and athletic here. I just think it's a matter of, like, what else is around that player, right? I mean, I think it's a matter of, you know, if you have two small guards, what's, you know, who's your 3, 4, and 5? I think that makes a big deal. And I mean, I think it is a little bit different maybe in the playoffs, and matchups make it a little bit harder as far as from a guarding standpoint. I think every team is kind of different here. I wouldn't dismiss just because you have a small guard that you don't have a chance to win a championship.
One final note, you've worked at NBA front offices, and it seems like now agents are dictating a lot more in the draft, especially later in the first and into the second. If you are someone who has to field a phone call from an agent that says, I don't want you guys to pick us, what are you doing?
I'm probably picking you. I think everything is circumstantial here. I think a lot of it is different. You know, 4 or 5 years ago, teams did not have the ability to have medicals. Unless you came and visited, or maybe they showed up for the pre-draft camp, and not everyone did. I think the information that you have on a player is more available, whether it be medical, whether it be background, whether it be everything that comes with it here. I mean, the Utah situation was certainly unique in with Ace Bailey, who they drafted, and then was he coming, was he not coming here? I think sometimes, you know, 18-year-olds or 19-year-olds are given bad advice. I saw Ace Bailey get drafted last Wednesday. He looked like the happiest guy in the building. And I saw him get off that plane on Saturday, and he looked like the happiest guy him and his family here. So I do think you have to be careful as far as steering your client. Listen, we saw in way back when with Eli Manning, right? He didn't want to go to the Chargers. He wanted to go to the Giants, and they did a really good job of that. But I do think there's a difference between doing that and then when you get drafted and then all of a sudden be like, no, I don't want to go to that team. I think that's two separate things.
All right, Bobby, appreciate everything. You're terrific on social media. And anytime you can talk to someone like me, like a fifth grader, and help dumb something down.
That's my new, you know, I've spent 2 years learning the apron now, and I never realized I could just explain it like a teacher in fifth grade, you know?
All right, great stuff, Bobby. We'll do it again.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Bobby Marks on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.